25% of their purse earnings for the owner and breeder and stallion owner and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com. Nominate now for Penn National's biggest day of the season, the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks will both run Friday, June 2nd, on a card that also includes four Pennsylvania bread stakes, each with a $100,000 purse. Call the racing office at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse, 800-233-8238. That's 800-233-8238.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and hour two, as I, as I continue to struggle here, we may have, I will figure out how to pull this off, and Case, I may have to press you into a little service here. All right, yeah. Let's get Ron Gierkink and look ahead to that. Didn't sound great, but no good. All right. We'll try Ron again, and there we go. No, that's not going to work. All right. Well, this was one of my... I know Ron listens, so... No, all right. Well, yeah, this was part of my concern with Ron, getting a hold of Ron Gierkink, and we may switch off to Marcus Hirsch. Because I wasn't sure that, Case, I'm going to have you, all right, let's go, I'm going to go to, let me go to Marcus first, and then we'll circle back to Ron. I hope it doesn't throw him off, because Ron did not have unlimited time for us this morning, and I do want to get the preview in for Woodbine. No stakes there, just, you know, breaking the ice, essentially, at Etobicoke, at Woodbine, the new Woodbine, actually, with some exciting, a lot of exciting things happening there. Marcus Hirsch, exciting things happening in Louisville. When do we expect your arrival?
A week from today.
I will want to, you know, I need to be there to see the Saturday works because we are all workout experts Derby week, right?
Exactly. Exactly. If
we weren't before, we sure are then.
Well put. Looking forward to seeing you and looking forward to some help from you on this crazy $800,000 Keeneland carryover. I mean, this is...
Oh, God, I forgot all about that.
That's uncharted territory.
How much is it, $800,000?
$860,000.
Mm.
It's crazy.
Well, that's because a horse won a race yesterday that could not possibly win and cost me a lot of money.
I saw you say that was a horse that you hadn't even considered for underneath.
Not even for third.
Yeah.
No, wait, the horse had one race over a sloppy track that kind of put it in contention, but every other dirt, well, whatever. You know, it's horse racing. It was a very strange race. Creative Minister looked like he was on the way to a clear victory at the 3/16 pole, and then everyone kind of just stopped. That horse that won looked like he was very well beaten at the 8th pole. What's the date today? The 21st?
21st. The horse, and I talked about Time for Trouble. This was the Jeff Hiles.
You liked this horse?
No, I like Jeff Hiles. I like his okay. like his dad. But I saw you. I saw that you were confounded by it.
Confounded is exactly the word. Very very well put. And you know, I mean, there have been a lot of wacky winners this meet. I think, in my opinion, horses that I just like, they just don't. They don't make sense to me, but that's not a bad thing necessarily. It's good to keep in mind if you think it could proliferate because, you know, as you well know, if you're playing vertical or horizontal wagers and you're structuring tickets to try to include for chaos because that's how you make more money.
Exactly. Exactly. Certainly this sequence today is not going to be not for the faint of heart.
It's 5-2, starts in race 5, right?
Yes, 5-10.
I'd probably have all the winners on top if I had to guess. I had a rough start to the meet, but I have rebounded. I am feeling more confident. I do think we know that this grass course, it's not every race and it's not every horse, but there is definitely a forward bend to it where being on the mm-hmm. lead is helpful. That didn't happen in every race yesterday, but it sure happened sometimes and it has been consistent enough. I think there's something to it. And until the rain comes, if it does come tonight, I'm going to believe that it's meaningful. So I think that the turf races need to be considered in that light.
I agree that you don't want to be too far back by any means.
No, not too far back, definitely. The deep closers are not having any luck for the most part. Sometimes a mid-packer, like Royal Patronage, was stalking the pace yesterday. He was easily the best horse in that race, and he managed to win. But then, I mean, the horse that ran second to him didn't make any sense on form either. But, like, that's just what I'm talking about with the way you don't have to like horses to profit from them winning or placing or showing. Because I just played that race for, you know, either the speed was going to win and hold on or they were going to stop. And a random horse that I wouldn't have logically considered was going to run second. So, I mean, I liked the winner. I had no feelings about the place horse other than it was going to be off the pace and was a long price. And more, you know, I know what I'm making public selections and we get caught up in, I like this horse, I like that horse. You know, it's so much more than that. So what do you want to do? You want me to talk about all these races?
Well,
starting
just,
with a fifth?
Just kind of run through, if you've got a couple of horses in this sequence, I just went through it with Scott Shapiro. If you've got some horses you think people could lean on in the sequence.
Ooh, leaning on. Well, I think that the first leg is pretty limitable. Maybe three. Katamosto, I do kind of like, don't love, but he's 7-2 on the line. I was hoping for a little more than that. Well, bear with me here because I gotta refresh myself. I'm already on to Sunday, as you know. Oh, okay. Don't know. I mean, I think appeal denied will be tough in the six, but I don't. I mean, he's not a horse I could like totally trust. I would probably want to have some backup plans there. Oh, and then. Oh boy, the seventh race to me is a must spread. That's a tough race to have in a sequence, isn't it? With all these firsters.
Yep.
Do you have any intel? I have none.
No, actually, and in fact, I said to Shap that it there wasn't really anybody that had, you know, some obvious sibling or damn.
No, exactly. You know? There's not pedigree help, and not I couldn't find many workout videos. Sassy Walker. Who I doubt will be 10-1. I did see her work on April 3rd, which was pretty good. She seems like a really robust young 3-year-old filly. I mean, she's big. She's worked fast. D'Amato, you know, has not. He didn't have success for a lot of years. Shivani Keeneland. He's 2-for-2 this meet. I think there's something there. I think I picked Truly Grateful. I have noticed that there's this incredible, I think it's IRAD money. I mean, every horse he rides seems to get overbet. I maybe it's just coincidence. I've noticed that recently. But Truly Grateful, Violence is a Violence, and Violence is a very good debut sire.
Yes.
And Stidham is a very good, I mean, he can get horses ready first out, no question about it. It's been years and years. If it's the right horse, the horse will be primed. This horse, I've never seen the horse work, but I do like the work pattern, and it did look like they kind of saved her for Keeneland when she'd been working for quite some time at Fairgrounds. You know, he is a base at Fair Hill, so there are other places they could have chosen to debut this horse, and, you know, Ortiz is riding. I think that somebody likes the horse, my suspicion, and the horse is probably quick. But I don't know anything particular about it. The Cox horse on the rail, Constitutions, I worry about them a little bit first time out. They not are always of the soundest mind. And then having the rail, maybe Cox has not run many first-time starters in 2-year-old main specials at Keeneland Spring over the last 5 years, just a handful. Anyway, I can't seriously endorse anyone there. Okay, well, here's a horse I really do like in the eighth, Juncture, the Judmont import, who, interestingly, she and Via Reggio ran against each other. They're both making their North American debuts in this allowance race. I think that I'm looking past that head-to-head matchup, which came at the Cura, right-handed, huge sweeping track with undulations. This horse, Juncture, has been a lot better going left-handed over the flat track at Leopardstown and on the all-weather at Dundalk. I think that she better suits a mile on the 16th and American-style racing. And the last time Cox had fillies, Euro import fillies for Judmont, I think it was 2019, both one of them won, the other one was second in the stake. I think that horse is definitely capable and well-meant, and I would have no trouble leaning on that one.
That's a help.
Okay. This, I mean, I did the work on that. I watched all those fillies races, and I do think Green Up could beat Interstate Daydream. I have a hard time getting past those two in the Double Dog Dare, and that's not very helpful because those are the favorites. I'm not really looking much deeper though. Interstate Daydream, she has a pretty similar pattern, and it's not necessarily going to repeat itself. But she was so impressive at Oaklawn last spring, and then made her worst race of the year at Keeneland in the Ashland. That was sans Lasix. She did run well without Lasix in the Black Eyed Susan, but this is no Lasix too. And apparently, I mean, Green Up is also no Lasix. I read Barrier once said she came out of the Cotillion with a pastern injury, so I don't necessarily attribute her performance there to Lasix, no Lasix. But again, I'm tired of trying to have to parse these things. I watched a Green Up work. It was impressive. She worked with my horse ran in the Belmont, We the People, and I thought worked well. And I took her to beat Interstate Daydream, not with a ton of confidence.
I will put in only another plug for Frost Point. And, well, one of the things I like is she, her first time going around a ground, was at Keeneland. She was second by a neck to super quick, the ill-fated Norm Cassie mare.
That she was really good there. She got really good.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
But I know, I mean, I'm not questioning Mr. Mott, who I have the utmost respect for, but it just looks like her better races were shorter. I don't know that going back out to two turns is going to be a huge bonus. She's in good form. She has not won a graded stake. This is the right spot in theory. It's just that I'm afraid she's running into two horses who are better than the class level.
I was a big fan of her dam, Baletto.
Yeah, good horse. Very good horse. The 10th, well, I mean, Shug and his grass horses have just been on fire.
Yep.
I mean, they're all running well. He won the last yesterday again with a horse that was 2-1, who bet down a little bit, but I mean, the horse was logical, I thought. That horse is going to be bucking the bias, though, if it really is playing to speed again, because he has Battle of Normandy, has no speed. I mean, he kept up a little with false paces at Saratoga, but I think he's going to be way back. What I might do there is try to pick who I think is going to lead, take a couple shots with that, and then use him as well, because I do think he's clearly the best horse in the race on accomplishment and is supposed to maybe be better. I just think you tossed the Pilgrim. He hated the soft course that day.
The gigantic $800,000+ pick six carryover $1 gets you involved. And this pool, I would think, figure what, 3.5 times, probably another $2.5 million.
I think if you take the whole thing down, you're going to be happy. I'll say that.
There you go. Exactly. All right. Time for game plan with DRF Hirsch.
Game plan. Game plan had a good April 15th. Skelly was a very generous price. I can't believe he paid as much as he did.
Good job.
I don't feel as good about this week's selections in the game plan, but first I have to remember who they are.
The Oaklawn Handicap and the Elkhorn and the Dahlia.
Yeah, I kind of remembered, actually. I just was clicking down and running my mouth while I got to the right races. What do you think of the Oaklawn Handicap?
I like the cast. Let me pull that package out. I like this cast. And
okay, here, let me be specific. What do you think of Charge It?
I, of course, at first was confused by the most recent performance because he was a horse I needed in that spot.
Confused or deeply disappointed?
I was confused by the effort and endorsed who beat him, who I actually like as a horse.
Yes, he's an admirable beast. We know who he is, though.
So that was surprising. The fact that Todd Pletcher at this late juncture is putting blinkers on him.
Not good.
That'll curdle your coffee.
I will add another thing. The horse he beat it first time back, Vittorio, did not exactly show out in gloriously in yesterday's allowance race at Keeneland.
That's a good point. That hadn't even thought about common running lines.
Well, it sounds like you're headed my direction, which is I have no interest in this horse right now, despite how brilliant he looked in the Dwyer last year.
You're probably right. The guy that I have come to just really enjoy is Ed Mosier, and Stiletto Boy.
He's not going to be 8-1, is he?
Well, Last Samurai is going to take plenty of money because, you know, Dwayne and Proxy has to be respected, and Charge It. So there are horses that are going to take the lion's share of money.
I don't think that Classic Causeway, who's listed at 6-1, is a shorter price than Stiletto Boy. I just cannot possibly see that.
I will tell you this. If he is, it's in part because Ed Mosier is an unknown. And that, you know, McPeak is a well-known. And I would say that that's a factor.
I guess. I mean, Stiletto Boy has been running excellent races going back to the time when Doug Anderson had him in the Iowa Derby.
How about that? I would love to see Mosier come in here and win this, but you know, this is a nice group. You know, even you know who's sneaky in here?
Senior Buscador?
Correct.
I know. I almost went there, but I'm not convinced he's a mile and an eighth horse. Maybe he is. I think he's not that far behind, and if he is, he had an easy, perfect comeback race. I definitely gave him a long look. But I went with Proxy, good old Proxy. Proxy is a frustrating horse because he can't quite get it right. He loses touch on the backstretch and it's difficult to get into a race. I think he's completely capable of winning this. A mile and a quarter is fine, but a mile and an eighth is also fine. His Pegasus is, in a way, a throw out because he didn't run at all after getting hit with a storm of kickback from post one. That also shows he's vulnerable to circumstances, which we know, but he did finish easily fastest in that race. And then if he would have just kept up a little better, he probably wins San Anita Handicap. What I did note was that that horse shipped to California from New Orleans for that race, shipped back to New Orleans, and then 15 days later worked a fast half mile and has been on a strong pattern ever since. To me, that strongly suggests that he is still in great form. I do think there's going to be a strong pace in this race, which will help him. And Rosario won the grade one on him. He's back aboard. If he can just please, Proxy, do what you can do and stalk instead of fall out the back door, and you will win this race.
The grade two Oaklawn Handicap, they'll go a mile in the eighth. I know that you didn't include it, but an interesting supporting stake in here, too, the $200,000 Bathhouse Row.
It's a pretty good race.
It is a good race, but Steve Asmussen with me on Monday when I asked for the Asmussen Lock of the Week, which he's got a very strong record. His five star releases on At the Races. They, believe me, the listenership goes to town. He said he would be very surprised if Red Root One did not win this race, and I thought that was interesting. He added the blinkers last time, he adds the Lasix this time, and this is a Preakness audition.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing last time. I think he's a pretty good horse. It wouldn't surprise me if he won either. Tap It Shoes is the other one that I was considering.
Yep, that's the other horse, there's no doubt.
The rider assignments say that Victory Formation is the one, the Cox that's supposed to win, but I don't always pay attention to that. Tap It Shoes is just, he was not quite there mentally, over the winter. He could be better now. I think he has a great style for this, but he may be hard pressed to hold off Red Route One going 9 furlongs.
Interlock Empire, if you get that 8-1, that's a nice number for a suck-along trip.
Yeah. He was impressive, but he did get a great setup in his maiden win. I thought he was kind of thrown to the wolves in the Arc Derby. I don't hold that against him. He could easily bounce back. Yeah, okay. But I didn't like anyone enough to to tout them. So
as a game plan involver, how about we go to Keeneland then and talk about the Elkhorn, which has got all the usual suspects.
Well, I'm on a new suspect.
Ooh.
Rising Empire is a relatively new suspect, having just made his stakes debut in the Muniz Memorial. I think that maybe people aren't going to take that race seriously. I didn't at first. I was kind of willing to cast it aside, but the more I looked and the more I considered, pretty legitimate. Spooky Channel, if you go through his form, he had a year-plus layoff. He's a good horse. He's run some big races. He won this race, I think. Didn't he? The Elkhorn one year, he beat two Emmys, I think. Anyway, and the Fairgrounds course became more conducive to front runners later in the meet, but I certainly don't think that it helped being on the lead. And this horse almost held on. Rising Empire led and almost held on while down at the rail, which I don't know if, well, they had moved the rail. And anyway, I don't think that it was any aid. Don't look at the fractions at Fairgrounds turf races this winter, this meet. They're meaningless. They're just going to make you confused. He didn't go fast, but I don't know that he went that slow either. The horse that was third by more than three legs, Gentle Soul, really liked that course and had a good winter. I think that as a form measure, that's pretty encouraging. This horse, he's five, but he's only run 13 times. He's only made three starts on grass, and he's only been racing in blinkers for four times. I think that, and he's always had some talent. I just think that the recent change in circumstances unlocked it. I think that he's the only speed in the race. If the course continues to carry front runners, I'm pretty sure that Florent Giroux will make the most of his tactical advantage, and I think that this horse could go wire to wire.
Well, that would not, under the conditions, especially softish turf, very tough to quicken on.
Right. I mean, turf to I don't give. Just don't, these are not horses that I fear. You know, I respect them. Red Knight, 9-year-old Red Knight. I mean, he's run some big races. He's perfectly capable. But I mean, he beat the other horse in this race, Valley Engineering, who is fine. But these are not top mile and a half horses. Nor is Highest Honors. He's had some trips. I get it. Including at Keeneland last year, but those are not horses that I'm scared to try to take on with a horse that I think could have a tactical advantage. Well, I mean, we're remiss not mentioning the Great Channel Maker, who I don't believe, I don't know, maybe he still has it in him. He keeps having renaissances. Maybe they'll go on indefinitely till the world goes dark.
There you go. All right, let's go to Laurel, and we weren't gonna, as it turned out, I thought we were gonna get to Callie today, but she's tied up, so we can't have a full review of the four stakes. But Marcus looked at the Dahlia, so we at least get to talk about one of them.
Yeah. Well, the line wasn't up when I filed my stuff yesterday, but I'm just looking at the odds guesses now, and my horse. Miss Carol Ann is listed at 6-1, which would be spectacular. Can I sign up for that right now? They have the other Grand Motion horse, Sopran Basilia, at 7-2. Maybe. I like the other one a lot better. She's a year younger. She's already had a race in the States. Grand Motion does many things very well. I have great respect for his competence, but I have noticed that his first time North American imports do not win at a very high rate, and this five-year-old to me looks like she needs more ground than a mile. This looks like a practice race. Could be totally wrong. Looks like the two horses have been working together. Unfortunately, I can't see any of those works and have Fair Hill works, but Miss Carol Ann in a class 2 handicap at Newmarket going a stiff 7/8, which is very comparable to an American mile, I thought ran a plenty strong race. She's a hold up kind of horse, and then when they ran her back at Goodwood last July, she's out there with no cover, like pressing the pace. I think it's a throw out. She just got too far behind a walking pace at Aqueduct in the Pebbles, and she actually had the fastest quarter mile and looked good doing it in her North American debut. I think that was a good kind of getting to know your race for her and getting to know American racing, and plenty of work first time L. I think she's going to run these horses down. I think the price will be fair with Surprisingly. It's certainly favored. I think Surprisingly is good, but beatable here. And I think that Jonathan Thomas horse, Regal Realm, will take some betting as well.
For those that haven't looked at it, and I'll take the opportunity to mention what a nice card this is tomorrow.
It is a good card. Another one.
Yeah, and I said this on Thursday morning, you know, that the weekend, I mean, Oaklawn had already drawn, so we knew what we had at Oaklawn. But then when everybody else drew, and, of course, you had the week off in Arcadia for Santa Anita coming back. So, you know, that card was going to be okay with the Kona Gold, and we'll talk about Hammer. We'll talk about it in a little bit in the Californian. But in addition to the Dahlia, the King Leatherberry and the Native Dancer earlier on the card, the Primanetta, as well in the seventh, and the Henry Clark. So it's a full docket of stake action. But then the allowances, a Turf Sprint sixth has got a full field of 12, and I'm also gonna have a bit of a sad reminiscence. The maiden ninth are fillies, 3-year-olds, mostly unraced or with one start, and the horse on the outside. For those that tune into this race, you may see a familiar jacket if you were a fan of Sweet Northern Saint. And Joe Balsamo, who continues to have a horse here and there, Joe Balsamo was the partner with the late Teddy Theos.
How sweet she is.
He was just, they're both wonderful people. Joe, a builder, but Teddy Theos was a Greek immigrant, and I wrote a feature about him in The Blood Horse at the time, and it's one of my favorite, really one of the favorite things I've ever done, because he was just a guy so full of life and loved the game, and he's the one who convinced Joe Balsamo to, who was kind of playing around with low-level claimers, and he convinced Joe Balsamo to, you know, you should be in with stake horses, you should be in the Derby, and then they end up getting to the Derby and having the Derby favorite on top of everything else. So seeing how sweet she is, as you just said, in this race for Joe Balsamo. And he goes forward with the familiar jacket with the red and gold. So I just wanted to pay tribute to the late Ted Theos.
All right. Well, you were clearly moved, and it's always good when people can get beyond the nuts and bolts and touts and have a little human connection in this game.
Yeah. Well, that's the only, frankly, Marcus, since you can't count on the outcomes, you better make the most of the interpersonal connections and the inter-equine connections, the way you connect with horses. And by the way, speaking of those connections, I'll mention two passings. Hirapur, if you didn't see Joe Clancy's piece, Hirapur passed away, and I saw that the wonderful, awesome Feather, was a 2-year-old champ, just wonderful, really good filly. She passed away too.
Well, rest in peace to them both.
Yeah, exactly. All right. What else we got? Well, and here's some news that I hinted at that just came across from the. No sooner do we talk about the Dahlia. I mentioned this morning that there was issues yesterday at Laurel, and I can tell you that the racing office has just sent out a mass text that racing at Laurel has been suspended indefinitely until further notice.
Okay, well.
So there's some breaking news.
That sounds
ominous.
What is this about?
It's about the track surface that.
Again.
Yeah.
So that's never been resolved. The main track.
There were two fatalities yesterday, and a third horse pulled up, and Hugh McMahon lost one, Damon Dillodovico lost one, and they worked on the track yesterday afternoon, evening, and I'm sure horsemen are, you know, I know the horsemen were concerned, and here is your answer. So this is, well, I suppose Delaware and Parks and Aqueduct Belmont condition books will be rifled at now. I'll try to get Alan Foreman in with.
Yeah, I did a story about this when Matt Haggerty was off, I think last year, so I'm a bit familiar with the ongoing issues. It's quite a shame.
Well, any Marcus, any other possible push that that didn't make the game plan cut to replace the Dahlia?
Something in Hawthorne, probably. Oh, they don't run Saturdays. No, I don't know. I was not too enamored of the Ben Ali. The California races didn't do much for me. I couldn't come up with anything at Oakland, so I'm sorry, people. You're just going to have to deal with two winners and two winners only this weekend.
Marcus, thank you. I will see you next week.
The Ville. All right, Steve. Have a good one.
Thank you. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. And I wasn't sure that, you know, I brought up this morning, first thing, when I mentioned some uncertainty at Laurel. And here's the answer with a loud thud. I feel badly for the horsemen and owners who have, you know, how many races can you run on the grass? Can you run grass cards? I don't know. This has been an ongoing. I mean, this has just happened, you know, over and over again. Wow. Let me get James, and that throws a little bit of a wrench in the works, obviously. But we also try to circle back around to Ron Gierking. But I got to get to James before 11. So let me do that. This is tough. This is a tough situation. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Any clever leans for this Keeneland carryover?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a beautiful day out of Keeneland, at least, you know, until late afternoon. It's going to be warm and no rain. And then all of a sudden, the temperatures are going to plummet tonight in Lexington, Kentucky, and it's going to be a little wet tomorrow and chilly on Saturday and Sunday. But, yeah, there's a couple horses I like in this late pick six sequence. I'll mention, first off, definitely, you know, heard Scott and Marcus, but a horse that I'm going to lean upon in the third leg of the sequence today is race number seven. And it's Stassi Walker. And I am buying Phil D'Amato being 2-for-2 this meet. I am buying that this filly, they probably identified her as something special in her training out in California. And, you know, has a 47-3 work here over the track at Keeneland. I think she's the real deal, this Stassi Walker. I think she'll be bet down from 10-1 on the morning line. But I'm going to lean on her in race seven today, Steve.
Okay, good. And she's come up now a couple of times. So that's another endorsement.
And the other one I'll mention real quick, this one's going to be my last second play, but, you know, in race number 10, well, first and foremost, there's been a lot of front-running wins on this Keeneland turf, and I've heard people talk about that earlier this morning and all week, but let me just say, I mean, it is not completely biased against late runners, because I've had two horses that have I've gotten beat on the wire by last the first horses on the turf. I loved Bubble Rock last Sunday in that allowance race. I thought she was a winner at 7-2 up open length, lone speed, and she got nailed, you know, in the final jump by Gam's Mission, last the first going into the far turn. And then the day before, last Saturday, I was on James Aloysius in race three, and that fiver, who's like 19-20-1, you know, he's dead last at 12 going in the far turn, and he closes and wins the race. So I just want to caution everybody that, speaking that these late runners can't win, I'll give you a couple of examples right there in the last 6 days. In this race 10, number 9, Our Dream Bride, broke his maiden the second time out last year at Saratoga, and he was rank and green as heck when he did it. Ian Wilkes immediately threw him in a couple stake races. You know, he just ran okay, 5th and 6th in those. Came to Keeneland last year, and he made a really nice run off the far turn to get the 3rd and upper stretch with Rosario. He hung a little bit in the stretch, but I still thought it was a positive effort to close his season. And he came back last time at Gulfstream Park. And I mean, that to me was just a tightener, Steve. You know, he had a white trip the whole way. You know, you could see even in the trouble line, you know, he's you know, I'm in the 8 path. You know, he's way wide off the turn. He gets beat 5 lengths. It was just a setup. The thing that's interesting about Our Dream Bride is that right after that race, he brings him right back 12 days later. He works 47-2 at Palmetto's. He works a bullet 59 flat on the turf at Palmetto's. And then he comes back with another 4th fastest work 5 furlongs there. He's giving him 2 maintenance moves. He's going to move forward significantly off that last effort. And I think he's got an encouraging effort at Keeneland under him. And I like seeing Joel Rosario get back aboard Our Dream Bride. So at 6-1 on the morning line, I like him in the finale, Steve.
Nice. Nice. First lay 6-2. There we go. All right. That's about that. That'll give pick six players a little bit of insight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to deal with that Shug horse in there, and there's some others that Scott and others have gone over, but I think he's going to run well, outrun his odds. And I'll just I'll mention some plays. Lean primarily on the stakes races Saturday at Keeneland and at Oaklawn Park. If you're ready for me to go over some of those,
sure, of course.
Saturday, I'll just start at Keeneland with the. Elkhorn Stakes. That's a race to me that I think I'm going to get a decent price on the Chad horse, Highest Honors, and I'm going to bet him. I think he needed his last race. I think he's going to be able to race closer to the pace in this mile and a half race, and I think you know, he'll be in the right spot, turning for home to prove best. I like his, this is a horse, Highest Honors. He's 7 years old. Over his first 5 years of his career until the end of his 5-year-old season, he had run 8 times. Chad Brown came back. He ran him 8 times last year. He gave him a good tightener in that Matt Giaramida, where he was just way too far back after breaking from the rail post. He's drawn outside today in post 8. Like I said, he's going to be able to race closer to a moderate pace, and I give him the edge. I like Highest Honors chances in the Elkhorn for Chad Brown.
I think you're right too that you might get 9-2, 5-1.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And you know, obviously those maker horses are going to take money, and you got to get past them. But I'm not too scared of Channel Maker and others, and I'm hoping to get a decent price. Turn into Ben Ali. You know, to me, with this this race, you know, Skippy Longstock is a horse to beat. He is stretching out to 1 3/16. And just the one thing about that last race in the Challenger is that, you know, he got passed at the top of the stretch by that Surly Furious, who wound up running 3rd at like 45-1. And that horse came back and ran last in his next race. And, you know, Tax, we'll see if Tax can run well ever again off of that runner-up. I'm going to try to beat him at the distance. I still respect him. Happy American, to me, was coming on last fall at Churchill. He ran a good race in the Tenacious in Louisiana. Neil Pessin probably shouldn't have run him in the mine shaft. He hurt his foot before that race. He got him back the foot back where he could, you know, wasn't hurting him, and, you know, never ran a step running ninth. And I thought in that New Orleans Classic, he just ran into a pair of buzzsaws. I think, you know, east of the Mississippi, Wes Will Power and Art Collector are two of the top three older horses in America. That was a really strong field. You know, you look at it, Rattle Rolls fourth in that race, Happy American's fifth, and Pioneer Medina sixth. I think Happy American has the most upside of those three coming out of it. I think he's going to move forward off that effort, move back into form, and he has won both races past a mile and an eighth, 2 for 2 at a mile and a quarter, and I think he's going to run a good race for Neil Peston and James Graham, Happy American.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and I mean, I thought Skippy, you know, figured to be able to kind of manage this, you know, on the front end.
And that's the kind of play, you know, and I talked about this last week with Shea Pierre. I mean, if you really love Skippy Longstock, then I'd be looking at playing that 4-6 straight exacta, because I really do think Happy American maybe he won't be good enough to win, but I think he's going to hit the board and miss Ben Ally.
Ben Ally, one problem with Marcus, with Marty not being able to come on today. Every Ben Ally year, Marty explains why it's the Ben Ally, not the Ben Ally.
And then I'll mention the finale tomorrow, race number 10. A race where, to me, you got Just Mike coming back with some speed out there. And, you know, Beer Can Man, you know, can show some speed for California. But I like number 6, No Balls, on the front end. You know, here's a horse that has won 4 of his last 7 starts. And, you know, last year he ran in the Quick Call and Bold Venture, and he headed to the sidelines. He was essentially sort of tailing off. But, you know, we saw this horse, we've seen these horses that have run like 2nd and 3rd in these turfway allowances then come back and win these races at Saratoga. And that was a really nice field last time. This Baker's Bay just got beat 3 lengths in the Grade 2 Shakerton right off of that allowance win at Turfway. The 3rd-time finisher, Nighttime, was coming off a next 2nd and $125,000 stake. And No Balls just showed his, like, he's back in form to me in that effort, showed high speed. He was clear. He got a little tired late. He's going to improve significantly off that effort. And, you know, and he's good on turf and synthetics. And I like him wire to wire in the finale tomorrow with Gerardo Corrales.
Excellent. No Balls for Ravelli. Somebody asked me, I went to get Tina a bottle of Bailey's, and the guys at the at Greenwich Liquors here in the plaza, and they said, "Who do you like in the Derby?" And I said, "You know, I said, I think I'm going back to 2 fills." And they said, "Wow, can he win?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to think so." I said, it's one of those things where you land on a Derby horse where the story is too good to actually happen. To get Ravelli a Derby win, it would be unbelievable. So, you know, I know I'm probably not on the Derby winner, but 2 fills is going to be my, I think, is going to be my stock answer here for the next couple of weeks.
I'll tell you a Derby horse that I don't have in my top 3. Heck, I didn't have it in my top 10 until here recently, but I think he's got that story angle. Frank Fletcher, and it's Rocket Can, and I'm interested to see how he trains.
Wow.
The whole key for me with Rocket Can, if he could be laying 5th or 6th in the early going, he could hit the board or maybe have a chance at an upset. Like I said, I'm not like saying, hey, he's my win pick by any means, but he's a horse that's been moving up. And, you know, I always look at that sentimental story angle too, Steve, and I was sort of going through it, like writing profiles of all these Derby horses. And, you know, I'm, you know, big fan of Frank Fletcher and everything he's done for the thoroughbred industry. And I think it'd be pretty cool if he got a Derby winner. And I think this is his first Derby horse.
Yeah, so. He's had more one turn types up till now, but including, of course, Frank's Rockette. The old Joe Hirsch line, which is, if you don't win, root for the best story. That's the media advice. Let's go over to Oaklawn. What are you doing there?
At Oaklawn, I'm going to play. You know, I'll just mention the three stakes. The first stake is that Valley of the Vapors, and I like number nine Exponential Star. I'm going to give her the edge off that maiden win. I mean, obviously she's facing a tough task against this Merlaza. One thing about Merlaza is that the numbers for those races just weren't that strong. I'd be more fearful of her if she'd gotten better figures. So, you know, she's going to step up and face a little tougher company. Classy Bridget. You know, just, I mean, obviously coming off a race against Key of Life, and she's a major player. But I think Exponential Star has the speed to get out there, sit right off the leaders, not get caught too wide. And I really like that maiden win last time for Fire. You know, she really just didn't have any chance after breaking slowly in her debut from post one. And I think she'll keep moving forward off of that for Lindsay Schultz, who's 10 for 35 at Oaklawn Park.
I thought that Exponential Star was the other horse with Merlaza. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And then in the Oaklawn Handicap, I take a big long look at Proxy, but I wound up like going with the Last Samurai. I just think, you know, this horse has just gotten so good at Oaklawn Park right now. And, you know, I'm not sure he'll carry his form elsewhere, but... You know, this. I don't really have a strong opinion in it, other than I think it's between Last Samurai, Stiletto Boy, and Proxy. I mean, I'm like in that try to beat Charge It group. We'll watch Charge It just crush them. But that's sort of the way I got a slight lead in there to Last Samurai.
You know, I'm fine. Stiletto Boy is at 8-1. I'm interested in. You know who actually... looks like he's circling back to a good effort is Rated R Superstar, and he's a horse that has cycled in and out over the course of his career, and that Essex is a deceptive performance, and on a fig basis he's coming back around to his good races, and if he runs one, if you're looking for a horse maybe for third at, you know, 18, 20, 23 to 1. Rated R Superstar is going to get ignored, and he's usable.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, you know, that old Oaklawn veteran. I thought it was a remarkable job that Bill Franco did getting him back into form even last year. You know, he really, when he won that Essex so impressively, he was 8-1 that day, and he really got him.
We were on him.
Got him back in form last winter, early spring. So I'll take a look at the last race, too, the Bathhouse Row. I heard Marcus there before I came on, but I agree with him. I thought that Tapa Chews... I thought that was a little bit of a tough trip last time, where he just sort of got caught up chasing the pace a little bit. The horses were all strung out across the track, and Dennington like sort of swooped by him late. But I like the way he kept fighting all the way to the finish line. Tapa Chews, he's been freshened off that effort. I think maybe Brad Cox give him a little bit of time, because he hasn't missed any workout time. He's worked steadily since that race. He's just like got to perhaps give him a little bit of time to keep growing, and I look for him to come back with a strong performance.
7-2, Tapa Chews, KD, Kent DeSormo in town to ride. And he's also on Stiletto Boy for Mosier off the big cap win.
Steve, we'll be seeing you here soon. My first day in Louisville is May 1st. I'll be there on Monday through Saturday, so doing 3 days of the work show and then working Derby through Derby Day on the broadcast team. So see plenty of you then. Look forward to it, and all the best this weekend.
Outstanding. I appreciate it, James. I will see you this week, and we'll be doing some of the things we always do a week out.
All right.
James Scully, everybody. James_Scully 111 on your Twitter. Let's take the break, Casey, if we could. I've got to see about an Alan Foreman stop in. We got a reboot with Ron Gierkink. We've got Nick Tamaro and Hammer as well. So we got a busy third hour, our last at home for a month. 2 weeks plus at Churchill, and then to the Iroquois, Percy Warner, and then Baltimore.